Let's take a look at some more crowd control, apartheid style, with short bits of film shot in the townships. Here you see large numbers of blacks, and these blacks are now in a crowd. You're also going to see, you see a black picking up another black who's been shot. You can see his limp, lifeless or soon to be lifeless body being taken away. And you see big yellow vehicles. Those are Caspers. The Casper is a mine protected vehicle. The Casper is very well protected. And then the top, at the top, the troops can get out and they can shoot from the top. So again, they don't exactly have a good shooting angle, if I could say that. They don't have a good firing angle. Just like those guys in the truck. They're not even comfortable in the way they are at the time that they are shooting. They're actually firing from an uncomfortable position. And again, there's no machine gun. Again, it looks like 410s. And you'll see the crowd running like hell. You see them diving on top of each other, literally trampling on each other. And here you can see, again, it's simple. It's just a vehicle and it scares the hell out of this crowd of people. And it's not even high tech. This is not high tech stuff. Maybe the highest tech there is the Casper. But other than that, the actual weaponry is not high tech. Yet this crowd is running like the bloody hell. And take a look at this. In that film footage, you didn't see anything high-tech except for the Casper vehicles, which are mine-protected vehicles, and they've got good armor to protect the troops inside. Other than that, there was nothing really high-tech. These guys were firing with shotguns again. They were doing so at an uncomfortable angle. They weren't even aiming properly. They were holding their weapons sometimes almost above their shoulders. And yet they had this crowd on the run like crazy. This crowd was running like hell. The blacks were diving to the ground to avoid being hit. But otherwise, nothing that lethal. There were no machine guns there. If there had been even one machine gun, a normal old machine gun, even a machine gun that's 100 years old, I'm not joking, even a machine gun 100 or more years old that had faced that crowd would have made short work of them. They'd all be dead. Most, if not all of them, would be dead in a couple of seconds. It wouldn't have taken a machine gun long to sort them out. You cannot say that this is high intensity. You cannot say that these whites are using extreme measures to kill blacks. Not at all. It's just a single vehicle. They're not even going out of their way to actually kill these people. They're just going out of their way to maybe disperse them and send them packing. But they're not even trying to deliberately kill them in a big way. This stuff is easy stuff. This is low-tech stuff. And look at that crowd. That crowd has absolutely no meaning. Those numbers mean nothing. Those blacks are literally trampling each other to death. So there you can see. Crowd control. Why are you afraid of crowds? Why do blacks bother you? this is stuff that's been inculcated by other people who've got other agendas and they're talking their nonsense. I just want to discuss some other things. Why I've always been positive about our chances in a race war. I've shown you these particular examples to show you the whole issue about a crowd. But even in this video, I've not gone into all the detail that I could have gone into. I could have said a lot more about various aspects of this. But you've got to understand that military staff actually is highly intellectual, even though liberals and other liars are trying to make you think that it's not intellectual. It is highly intellectual. And there are many, many things you can study. And our history as a race is extremely rich in information. And the first time I truly began to think about race war, I will admit, was as a result of these von Rendsburg prophecies. Because I read those prophecies back in the early 1990s, and when I saw what the blacks were doing in Zimbabwe and how South Africa was going, I began to realize that there's going to come a time where these blacks are going to come after our property. They're going to come after our physical possessions. They're going to try and drive us out of our homes and farms. It's not just the farmers. They're going to try and drive whites out everywhere. Their goal is going to be to try and drive us out and seize everything that belongs to us. Businesses, farms, homes. That's their goal. They're going to try and do this. And when I started looking into these things, and I began to look at more large-scale conflict, as opposed to the guerrilla-type conflict that we had before, that is when I began to really dig into these things in a big, big way. I actually spent quite a bit of my own money and time acquiring special books, special military texts, texts that are rare, that you won't just find anywhere. I went and found these texts. I found tables, carefully compiled tables on the lethality of weapons, on all kinds of different studies that have been done by military people. I even went so far as to spend months and months taking equations that come from various military studies, and these equations calculate battle statistics. They talk about different kinds of attacks and defense. And I spent months and months of my time actually working out like a sort of a software wargaming engine, an engine that allows me to throw numbers into it and to do calculations and to then spew out the results. I also looked at just normal wargaming methods. Now, the Germans are the inventors of wargaming methodology. Germans have been the first and most thorough proponents of wargaming. The Germans play wargames. They play them. They used to play them on tables with sand models, and then they played them out in the open. And if we whites want to do stuff properly, we should actually be working our tactics, strategies, and doing some kind of wargaming and some kind of preparation to start thinking about how you could defend yourself. In my own experiments that I used, I even got hold of a game. There was a game that was created by our enemies in New York, and it was a game that was designed so that South Africa loses, but it was a proper war game. a proper commercial war game, and it was banned in South Africa. The war game is called South Africa. I got hold of this banned war game, and this banned war game was based on the notion that the Russians and others would come and eventually the whites would crumble militarily. The war game, I used to like a lot of what's called board wargaming. Not wargaming with little soldiers that you put in front of you, but there's a different kind of wargaming before the age of computers that was based on hexagons and maps, and it was called board wargaming. And there were lots of really good wargames that came out, commercial wargames that came out about 30 and 40 years ago. And I took even that board war game, modified some of the rules, because the rules were unbelievably against the whites. And I modified some of those rules and just played some basic war games, just some very basic stuff, just to make some assumptions. I did things like look at the number of whites in different cities. I didn't spend years at this, but I did spend quite a lot of time, months at the very least. And I went to great depths looking at what could happen and the various things that can come from this. And in the end, I just came to the conclusion that we will be able to survive. There's no doubt about it. That it just depends on our creativity. That even without any preparation, and this is an important thing, I had somebody on one of my websites. Somebody on one of my websites came to me and said to me that, you know, the Saidlanders have a plan. And what is my plan? Well, originally, because I don't have an organization, I don't have an army, I'm not in charge of anything. My original plan was that I was going to warn whites the moment that I think something's going to come down that's serious, I was going to warn them. And then it was simply a case of I was going to try and do a few things myself that could try to help them. My original plan was to see if I could work out a method of getting military weapons for whites. And the only military weapons I was thinking of were actual military rifles. Military rifles and the ammunition for them. Because I thought that even if we had a few hundred of those, even better still, a few thousand, it would completely swing the game into our favor. And I was looking at all kinds of dodgy ways of how would I be able to get guns. But be that as it may, my plan for getting the weapons failed, and Israel was part of it at the time. I was going to my Jewish friends in Israel, and I was trying to see if I could get guns out of the Jews, because back then I still believed Jews were on our side. Anyhow, the bottom line was that with or without these weapons, I'd seen enough of the way that South Africa operates that I was absolutely convinced that we have enough whites with enough military skills and enough things that they can lay their hands on in an emergency and with some quick thinking, that I was quite convinced that within a few days, whites would be able to work out a plan. In these military equations and military studies, most of them from the US Army, in these military studies and all this tedious, dry military stuff that I went through, I realized that if the blacks did various things, that they would catch us off guard, but that this would be a limited thing, that they would, at the very best, only have a certain amount of time in which to do certain things. And that our ability to respond would actually increase very quickly because once people are over the initial shock of something big, then they would start becoming more functional. You go through a stage of shock, and militarily, the stage of shock lasts a maximum of 3 days. And within 3 days, your head will be clear, you will have started adjusting to your situation, and you'll start becoming functional. And many other things happen that are good. My original interest was in a worst-case scenario. It was in the Sina van Rensburg type of style, the all-out attack. Can the blacks take us in an all-out attack? And I looked at the all-out attack theory, and the all-out attack has got many problems with it. Yet the all-out attack is the best chance the blacks will ever get. The blacks can then move into other modes. The blacks have the option of maximum all-out attack, and then the blacks have got the options of lesser and lesser and lesser violence. So they can go less than an all-out attack. So an all-out attack could be an all-out attack on all whites across the country at the same time. Then that is the maximum force. Then after that, everything else becomes less and less and less. An all-out attack on whites in a single city, an all-out attack on whites in a certain farming area, an all-out attack in other smaller ways, or an all-out attack on whites in a certain province. The moment that the blacks start moving away from maximum force, you then get large numbers of other whites who are able to perceive that an attack is underway. Those whites then have the opportunity of A, they're not under attack, but B, they are able to see that other whites are being attacked, and they can immediately start preparing for an attack themselves. They can start preparing their own defenses. So the moment you start moving away from blacks using maximum force, and the blacks start downgrading their fight, the blacks start moving from all-out attack to lesser attack to more focused attacks to high forms of guerrilla warfare to low forms of guerrilla warfare. The more the blacks move towards softer forms of warfare, the more chances there are for whites to actually start working out countermeasures, adjusting to the situation. In fact, the whole thing just works more and more in the favor of whites. And for me, if the blacks could not win in an all-out massed attack, and they could not break the whites in an all-out massed attack, then everything else that follows, no matter what strategy they use, will be very favorable for whites. In fact, it could be so favorable for whites, it'll be fantastic. And even after looking at methods that they've used in neighboring countries and so forth, I just came to the conclusion that it doesn't matter what strategy they use, the whites will be able to adjust to this, and very quickly, all sorts of things will happen. All kinds of things are going to happen. And I looked into this, I did all kinds of basic wargaming and calculations and analyses of this, and I just came to the conclusion that whatever they do, they're going to find themselves with large pockets of whites who are able to defend themselves. They're going to be large pockets of whites who will easily be able to defend themselves. The Saidlanders also misconstrue something that is in my book, Government by Deception. In my book, Government by Deception, the only warning that I gave to whites, where I said whites should run, is I said that whites should run and abandon outlying areas. Those were my exact words. Whites should flee and abandon outlying areas. The Sidelanders have gone and completely inverted that. The Sidelanders have actually completely inverted that and have said that you should run to outlying areas. And that's actually wrong. That's actually wrong. They are fleeing. They're saying everybody must go out of the cities. I'm saying people must get out of the rural areas. The rural areas are the places where you're going to be killed. The places where the farm murders are taking place are the outlying areas. Your constant murder of farmers is taking place far away from the cities. It's the people who are out in remote areas who are being murdered. The people who live in more densely packed environments have got more protection going for them. And it's the people out in remote areas that are actually the ones that can be killed easily. They've got no defenses. They're sitting far away. If they're under attack, there's nobody who can come to them. In the cities and in more denser areas, you've got people who can come to your aid. You've got places you can hide. You've got more infrastructure around you. That infrastructure works. And in the event of a war, that infrastructure will work even better because you've got lots of whites who are trained in all kinds of defensive stuff. You've got people running security companies. You've got people who are police, either current police or former police. You've got people who are trained in emergency services. You've got all kinds of functionality right at your fingertips. And even if the blacks tried to cut some of this off, there are all kinds of problems. There are so many structures that exist. I lived on a farm, and I can tell you that on a farm, you are by yourself. And if somebody comes, it's you in your house and you're alone. And to try and get a message to somebody, and even if you can get a message to somebody, you've still got a time lapse. And in South Africa, there can be long time lapses. The country is big. That is why when people are packed more closely together, they will survive. And that is the very basis of all military fortifications, of cities. These are defensible positions. These are defensible positions. And in fact, our cities are so defensible that you could make them even more defensible with careful analysis and careful planning. You could actually look at the places, and in South Africa, for example, roads are a thing that you could control. You can cut these roads off. You can completely cut off the couple of roads that bring people into a suburb, and you just cut off a couple of roads and the entire suburb is quite well defended. And for the enemy to then get in presents them with all kinds of new problems. I've looked at this thing from every conceivable angle, and there are basic military facts about attack and defense, which I'm not going to go into here. Attacking is the hardest form of warfare. Attacking is the hardest form of warfare. Defense is the easiest form of warfare. And defenders always have an advantage over attackers, even if they only have a few hours in which to prepare. Even within a few hours, you can do something. If you've got a week in which to prepare for an attack, you've got lots that you can do. You've got lots. Furthermore, there are other dynamics that come into it. Even a guy like General Eisenhower, whom I have no respect for as a person, and they used to refer to him as Ike the Kike because he's got a Jewish background. Even Eisenhower has said something along these lines. He said, in warfare, planning is essential, but the moment the battle starts, the plan is rendered, worthless. But you cannot fight without a plan, even though the plan itself is going to start falling apart the moment you engage in battle. And there's somebody else. I was looking at a book that somebody had written about Napoleon, and they spoke, it was an Englishman's study of Napoleon. And the guy actually called it blundering his way to success. And he said that Napoleon's actual methodology was not so much that he planned so well, but that his plans started falling apart. And that he was able to maneuver fast enough so that he could adjust to any situation that takes place. Now, I've studied Napoleon's campaigns and I've seen what others have written. I'm sitting with a page of more than 1,000 books on 1,000 pages on Napoleon's campaigns. And I've gone through it and I've also looked at other generals. And I got to tell you that Napoleon had a very cunning system. His system was extremely cunning. And it was based on a fluid kind of a army structure. And Napoleon knew about motion because warfare is about motion. And it boils down to the fact that the enemy would think that they've got him cornered, but he knows that his structure has got certain speed advantages, and he's able to always be just a little bit ahead of his enemy. And his enemy thinks we can knock you out, and then he just pips them at the post slightly. And I want to tell you something, that the whites are extremely capable. If the whites were under threat, even normal whites, they would start getting agitated very quickly and they would start doing things. And it almost doesn't matter what kind of planning the blacks engage in, the whites would be able to react. And I've observed the blacks extensively and I've drawn a lot of my own conclusions about the black ability to make war against us. And everything from high intensity to low intensity and everything in between, we can beat them. We can put these blacks in a spot that's going to make them cry. These blacks have never faced anything really nasty. And even under apartheid, I'm going to repeat to you, even under apartheid, the whites went out of their way to not cause casualties among the non-whites. They went out of their way to not cause casualties among these people because the whole world was focusing on them and the whole world would punish them. The whole globalist Western world would actively punish them with sanctions and other kinds of boycotts and things every time something happened. So the whites of South Africa went to extreme lengths to not kill black people. Extreme lengths. And the bit of violence that they did use was violence that was utterly essential. And it was mostly police actions. These blacks in South Africa have never faced a real military force. They've probably not faced a military force of whites against blacks since the British invasion of the Zulus in 1879. The blacks of South Africa have not fought a race war in 150 years. The last time they fought a race war was the British invasion of the Zulus, and the last time the Boers and the blacks openly fought each other was in those times and earlier. These blacks, these non-whites in South Africa have never actually faced actual military combat. And when the ANC and other communists were active in South Africa, the vast majority of the time, they didn't even touch military bases or attempt to even kill military people. Most of the time, they were fighting the police. The police. South Africa was defended by a paramilitary police. And the police are not an organization that goes out of their way to slaughter, whereas an army goes out of its way to kill. The police are there to just bring about law and order and in order to break up the enemy and to keep them divided. And the police play lots and lots of games. And the police, which are mostly Afrikaans men actually, the police are very cunning and they are able to do a large number of things without getting people hurt or with using force to the minimum. But in military warfare, you don't use minimum force. If you do it properly, the way that it's been done for thousands of years, you go with maximum force. You need to hit the enemy with everything you've got. When you face a situation, you try to inflict as much damage as you can on the enemy as quickly as you can, with the least losses to yourself. And another very important part of battle is that if you hit an enemy with much stronger force than they have, your casualties go down. The more force you use against your enemy, the more casualties they suffer, and your casualties go down. Your casualties go down exponentially. Their casualties go up exponentially. So the original concept of warfare, of the white man's form of warfare, is to use maximum force at specific points with great intensity. And if you come with great intensity, you can wipe out these people. You can take a enemy army and kill huge numbers of them. And you can absolutely shatter them to pieces. You can go afterwards and capture their weapons. You can go and pick up their weapons. If you do this correctly, you'll be able to pick up their weapons. And you'll be able to take it back and use it for yourself. There are so many things you can do once your mind is set on opposing these people and using every single technical advantage, tactical advantage, any kind of psychological advantage that you can think of. And you don't have to be defensive either. Even if they attack you, part of your mechanism will include counterattacks. You will find things that you need to attack immediately, things that will gain you advantages. Here in these cities, I will tell you, there are so many things to attack that are worthwhile. There are things I've sat and thought about, like, what would you do if you don't have weapons? What can you do? How can you do it? I will tell you, there are 1,001 tactics. 1,001 tactics that all you need to do is have something that functions, a small force that functions. And if that force uses all the other tricks, all the other old military tricks, tried and tested from thousands of years of warfare, there is so much you can do. You can do so much in these cities. You can go crazy. These cities have got so much stuff in them. And other higher level stuff, which I'm not going to go into, is what should your strategy be? What tactics would you use within that strategy? What opportunities are there? And another thing is, once you actually run into actual combat and warfare, there are things that you're going to discover right there and then that you didn't even think of. And you'll be able to come up with new tactics within a matter of days. You'll be able to come up with new tactics within a matter of days, and you'll say, listen, that and that happened over there. That was bad for us. But did you see over there something else happened? And look at what happened there. Oh my goodness, we should do more of that. That's exactly the kind of thing that's going to happen. Warfare is dynamic, and warfare is about organization and execution of things. It's got many, many levels. It's got lots of complexity, and there is lots of scope for whites to apply their minds and to use their old ingrained survival ingrained survival instincts. And I got to tell you that, as far as I'm concerned, there are so many ways to deal with these situations. But I sat and I looked at this from every conceivable angle. And there are many, 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 many things that I will never, ever, ever mention in my videos. I will never discuss it in my videos. I will never talk about it in my videos. Advantages that we have, weaknesses that they have. There are lots and lots and lots of these things that I will never, ever, ever, ever put in my videos. So you will not know the kinds of things that I've observed about these people that I think would work like a charm for us. I think there is so many things we could do. In fact, it may even be that you think they're going to come to try and wipe us out. You might be shocked that we might actually corner them. You're going to say to me, that's impossible. And I'm going to tell you, I think it is possible. I think we could corner these people. I think there are many things we could turn to our advantage. The real thing is that these people have used all their tactics again and again and again. And we've just been sitting quietly. We haven't invented our own tactics. We've not even done technical engineering, scientific thinking about what we should use, could use. I think that we've got a huge untapped skill base of creativity that we could tap into. And all you need to do is just be under pressure, and then you'll see what happens. So I just wanted to make it clear that I've done lots and lots of all kinds of theoretical and other exercises and thoughts on these matters. I've looked at military campaigns. I've played with simple simulations. I've looked at this. I've looked at that. Personally, I must tell you, I enjoy it. I enjoy it like hell. It's actually great fun. And it allows you to sit and really think. And you really, really sit down and think what would happen. At one point, I actually thought that if I had enough time ever, something I would have liked to do one day, which could probably take a year of work, would be to go and war game. Re-war game the entire Anglo-Boer War, because the entire Anglo-Boer War would be a fascinating topic to war game and to study the tactics of the time and the responses and what various methods there were of dealing with things if it had been done differently. And the Anglo-Boer War is not that old that it's completely irrelevant. There are many things from the Anglo-Boer War that are still valid. You had artillery, you had rifles that were firing, they were already moving beyond the musket, they were using smokeless rounds, which already allowed the Boers to be snipers and effective snipers. There was heavy artillery. The only thing they didn't have was vehicles were petrol and diesel powered vehicles and aircraft, but otherwise they had everything else. The kind of technology that exists today, I think we could go to town. I truly think we could go to town. I think these blacks, if they tried to actually want to fight it out with us, I think they would struggle, man. They would need hundreds of billions of rands, hundreds of billions of rands, just to even try and face off with us a bit. And it could even move into the trillions of rands if they had to face off against us. They would have so many problems. They would have unbelievable amounts of problems. And whites are not malicious. The whites of South Africa, anybody who says the whites of South Africa are malicious is just talking nonsense. These people are hardcore Christians. They're not malicious. They did their best. They bent over backwards to stop killing these people. But if you went and you applied the actual kinds of tactics of whites in truly desperate situations, even in pagan times where killing was not a problem and that was your goal, and you had more recent guys like Napoleon. Napoleon focused on smashing armies. That was his speciality. Smash the army because then the enemy is defenseless. And that is what he used, and it worked very well. It worked very well. But there were others who used all kinds of similar strategies. And I will still be doing a lecture and a talk about the greatest generals in Western history. And you will see a lot of similar stuff coming up again and again and again. But I just wanted to make it clear to you that these things that I'm talking about is not just sucking it out of my thumb. I'm not just reading it out of some prophecy. I've sat and done my homework. I've spent a lot of time digging and thinking and observing and pondering. And I reckon that South Africa's got so much stuff in it that you could tap into in the event of a war. And if the whites started thinking cleverly, I think the whites could do all kinds of weird things, things you wouldn't even think of, and you would be shocked at the outcome. You'd be shocked at the outcome. I think that those who think that these blacks are just going to come and overwhelm us with numbers and that their access to money, funds, everything, that this is just going to be the thing that's going to flatten us. Not so. It's not going to be that easy. We should be able to hold out for a long period of time. We should easily be able to hold out for years, maybe easily decades even. If we really put our minds to it, we could hold out for decades, I think. And I've sat and thought about the structure of the country. I've looked at the population statistics, the ratios, and possible things that could happen. And I have a few high-level thoughts about what would transpire in a conflict. Where would this thing actually focus? And where would the, what would the whites be able to do? And I got to tell you, I just look at what the Zuidlanders tell people militarily, and I just think these are just a bunch of goofballs. These are just a bunch of goofballs reading some old stuff and just reinterpreting it in all sorts of helter-skelter, silly ways. It's got no basis in reality, and the actual reality is going to be very different. it's going to shock you. It really is going to shock you. And I've observed and lived among these whites for long enough that I want to tell you, anybody who says that these whites are malicious is just talking total shit. They're just talking complete and utter shit. These white people are not malicious. And these white people are, these white people may be frustrated. They may be frustrated and angry, but they are disciplined enough that they have managed to survive their own frustrations, and they've not acted on their actual feelings. They've not acted on what actually their natural instincts are. They are able to totally control their instincts so that they do not do that which nature makes them angry enough that they want to do it. They don't do that stuff. They are very, very controlled, these people. So people who think that the whites have gone out of their way to, no, you don't understand. The whites have always stuck with minimum force, always. And they've even bent over backwards, extremely bent over backwards, in order to not cause casualties for blacks. These blacks are so spoiled. These blacks have not fought an actual racial conflict in 150 years. They've not actually had a true military force up against them. And if they had a military force up against them, even a white militia type thing that quickly gathered itself together, these blacks would struggle. They will struggle like crazy. They will struggle more than you'll believe. You are going to laugh when you see some of the stuff that comes up. And when you start thinking in terms of maximum force and being utterly malicious, utterly ruthless, those are the ways that a white man should think. I'm going to repeat it. You must think in terms of maximum force, utterly malicious, utterly ruthless. Your goal is to hurt as many people as you can. Your goal is to kill as many people as you can. Your goal is to find the weakest spot in the enemy and hurt him as badly as you can in his weakest, weakest position. You must also never, ever want to do anything that makes life easy for your enemy. You must be utterly, utterly malicious, totally spiteful. You have to be absolutely ruthless in your conduct. That is the way you should think. And all white men need to move into that mode. All over the world, whites are just bending over backwards for these people. And you need to stop that nonsense now. And you need to stop helping them. And you need to stop giving them ideas. And there are many things that you need to withdraw from these people. All kinds of kindness and all kinds of other things. These people must come up against a brick wall, and they must stop being mollycoddled. They need a taste of reality. And I want to tell you, these people are living in la-la land, okay? They live in la-la land. I worked among them. I observed them. I thought about them. I questioned them. These people live in la-la land. And they have no idea. They have no idea what whites could do to them if whites had the motivation and the determination. They have no appreciation of white decency, of kindness. They have no appreciation for any of these things at all. These people need to be hurt. Hurting them is going to clear their heads. And you need to be a ruthless, malicious, spiteful dog. A cold-hearted piece of steel. That's what you must be. And white men have to transform their thinking all across this planet. White males need to transform their thinking away from any of these nice, sweet things. Get away from that. Stop being Mr. Nice Guy. Be Mr. Hard Guy. Be the man who goes and looks for the weakness, and You find their weakest link and you hurt them at the point that gives them the most pain. And you just carry on doing it no matter how much they scream. You've got to be a ruthless animal. Utterly, utterly ruthless, heartless, cold, nasty person. If white men do not turn themselves into that beast, then white men are going to go nowhere. But we have to be the beast. And we have to do this everywhere. When I was in the USA, I saw lots of examples of the weakness of whites. Whites in America don't even know how to face off against blacks that they outnumber. They outnumber the blacks. And I can see the utter weakness of capitalism and business. These things make people just so weak. And you got to get out of that mode of thinking. You've got to return to the warrior mentality. And the warrior is a whole different animal. He's the total opposite. He doesn't do anything that's nice. His goal is to hurt. His goal is to maim. His goal is to scare. His goal is to break. Your goal is that everything that your enemy has, you want to try and destroy it. You want to inflict upon them the most harm that you possibly can as a human being to the maximum of your ability. You've got to think in the most devious, hideous ways. What is the thing that makes them the most uncomfortable? What is the thing that makes them the most vulnerable? And go for it. That is how you need to think. And if they're screeching and howling that what you're doing is immoral, you just don't care. You don't care. You use total force. The white male has to learn to use maximum force, total force. Throw yourself into this thing. If you don't do this, you're not going to have the effect that our forefathers had. All white men across the Western world need to get into that mode of thinking. Get away from saying, oh, are you thirsty? I will give you water. No. If you are thirsty, I must make you more thirsty. I must cut off your water. If you are bleeding, I'm not going to bandage your wounds. If you are lying there dying, I'm not going to help you. And if you are lying there dying, I will kill you in whatever way suits me. Even if it means I'm not going to shoot you because I don't want to waste a bullet, therefore I'm going to kneel down and I'm going to break your neck. That is the way you need to think. You need to think like a beast, okay? And the only thing you need to think is what works for you and what gets your job done easier, quicker, faster. Utter ruthlessness is something that every white male needs to bring into his being. You've got to be an utterly ruthless dog. There's no empathy for anybody except the people on your side. On their side, your goal is to hurt them to the maximum. You need to hurt them physically, hurt them mentally, hurt them emotionally. You need to make them crazy. You need to unseat them in every conceivable way. That is how you must think. That is the way to think in order to do maximum power. White men have to dump this bullshit of minimum force. This is total bullshit. This is the worst freaking advice you can possibly get, is minimum force. And you'll continuously hear this in the bloody media, among the liberals, among all kinds of junk, rubbish. You gotta go with maximum force. Hit with everything you have. Hurt to the maximum. You don't want to go into a battle and say, oh, we killed 100 and we injured 200. You want to go into a battle and say, we killed 100,000 and there were only a few hundred survivors who managed to get away. That's the way you should think. You've got to get into that mode. If you don't think like a beast, you're not going to get there. This is tried and tested. This is the cold-blooded way you really fight war. And until you can get that into your heads, you're not going to be able to handle it. In these casualties that you see in this chart, you'll see that civilian casualties have gone, have become more and more and more, and military casualties become less. What does this tell you? This tells you that the soldier is safer than a civilian. The soldier is safer than a civilian. That is a fact of history. You go and you arm yourself, you're not going to die. Your chance of dying once you are armed, even mildly armed, becomes less. So the more of your people you can arm, the more you can do defensively to protect your people, the better. And of course, the other aspect of this is that a lot of this stuff is low intensity stuff. So what these low intensity scumbag guerrillas do is they come and they target the civilians because they are not able to target the males who are armed. But there are solutions to this. Our way of fighting guerrillas is wrong, okay? We are hunting down the individual guerrilla. That's wrong, that's stupid, okay? You need to go and find their sources and smash them there. That's the answer. And if you can't find their proper sources and bases where they are and smash them there, then what you do is you go and you kill their women and children. So every time they kill your women and children, you go and kill 5 or 10 times the number of women and children on their side just to show them that we can hurt you. And you just use all kinds of brutality. That's all you do. You use all kinds of uncontained brutality in order to inflict pain on them. That's what you do. And it will make them crazy. It will make them crazy. They'll lose their minds. These blacks of South Africa are the most spoiled brat blacks in the world, except for the spoiled brat blacks of the Americans. The American blacks are probably the biggest spoiled brats in the world. The whites have bent over backwards for them. The next most spoiled brat bunch of blacks are these blacks of South Africa. These people don't know what it's like to be hit with a steel fist. That's what they need. They need some good steel fists chomping at them. They need to be hit straight in the kisser. And the British actually went and smashed the Zulu Empire. The British went and physically crushed and destroyed the Zulu Empire. That was probably the last big racial conflict in South Africa. It wasn't even the Boers. It was the British. British went with their army and they went and they slaughtered and smashed the Zulus until they crushed the Zulu Kingdom. It was the British that brought the Zulu Kingdom to an end, not the Boers. Even though the Boers did fight it and did actually mess with its politics and did control it. But the British physically smashed it and ended its existence. So, you know, there's lots of stuff to look at, but you got to think differently and you got to get away from this soft kind of love your enemy kind of nonsense. You need to become brutal and cold-blooded in the extreme. The only people you care about are your people, your army, your civilians. The only people whose lives you want to save are your people's lives. The other side, you want to inflict as much damage and harm and pain and suffering and mental, physical suffering. You want them to be killing each other. You want them to flee. You want them to run away. You want to scare them in every conceivable way possible. You want to make their life a total hell beyond hell times 10,000. And you want to inflict it upon them day and night, in and out. You want to make them completely berserk. They mustn't know up from down, left from right. They must know nothing. That is the way you fight. And white males have to get back to this kind of thinking. Got to think like a cold-hearted piece of robot. you must be absolutely, absolutely not concerned by injuries, pain, suffering on the enemy side. You'll go and you'll patch up your buddy. You'll go and you pick him up, you help him. You'll care for your friend, you'll care for your brother, you'll care for your people. The enemy, you will not give a shit about. You will not give a shit about. And you will inflict upon them the maximum pain, suffering, and harm that you can that makes your life pleasant. Your goal is that you must inflict pain upon them with the least amount of casualties on your side. End of story. End of story. And the secret to it is moving to the bigger scale stuff. You gotta hit with maximum force. Maximum force massively reduces your casualties. That's a straightforward fact of military history. And you'll constantly hear the drumbeat of the liberal, everybody else telling you minimum force, minimum force. Worst advice in the history of the world. That is advice that's aiding the enemy. You use maximum force. You use maximum force. In fact, you should even use disproportionate force. If they come with 100 people and attack you, you should take 10,000 of your people, go and attack their people, kill 50,000 and say, look, this is what we've done. And, you know, try that again. Every time you come and hurt us, we're going to come and we're going to kill 10,000 or 50,000 of your people. And that's what we're going to do. And that's another thing, is you'll hear these things of using proportional force. No, use disproportionate force. It'll work. It'll work perfectly. And it's quick. It's quick. And the bodies will just be lying there. And you'll see, oh, good God. You know, look at how many people they slaughtered and look at how quickly they did it. Battles do not have to last 6 months. A battle can last 8 hours. Tens of thousands can be killed in a couple of hours. It's easy. People were doing this thousands of years ago. 80,000 soldiers could be killed in a day in the time of the Roman Empire. 80,000 could be killed in less than a day with swords. So all these numbers and things, don't be fooled by all this liberal junk rubbish thinking. Minimum force, don't do this. You just say to them, listen, man, if you touch our civilians, we're going to kill 20 times the number of your civilians. And we don't care if they're innocent, we're just going to come and we're just going to kill them, and that's going to be the lesson to you. End of story. You don't have to explain anything you do. So get your mind out of all this other rubbish that you're thinking. You're thinking a lot of rubbish. And, oh, minimum force, proportional force, you know, get out of all this liberal crap. That's what's leading us to defeat. That's what's leading us to defeat. The history lessons are clear. And it can be shown statistically, it can be shown mathematically. Maximum force. You need to hit with maximum force. Maximum force saves the lives of your soldiers and inflicts more casualties on the enemy. Maximum force is what is going to keep you alive. There are other tricks as well over and above maximum force, but that is a very important concept to understand. If you go with 100 men and you fight 100 men of the enemy, that is not as effective as taking 200 men and fighting 100 men of the enemy. The moment you double your strength, your losses will be halved. Your actual losses will be halved and the enemy's losses will be doubled. That's just a very rough idea of how this thing works. It has other more, there are other deeper details, but I'm just trying to give you some basic conceptual overviews of what you've got to be looking for. And if you smash an enemy army, you want to keep it smashed. You want to be hunting them down. That was a big thing of Napoleon. Napoleon made a point that when he attacked an enemy and he was facing an army, the big battle is while your army is complete, their army is complete. You got to get to the point where you break their army. Once you break their army and overcome their army, Then what happens is that now their structure is broken, they're fleeing, they're panicking, they leave their heavy weapons behind, which you come and you pick up. And you then got to have guys who keep hunting down those who are running away. You hunt them down continuously. You do not go and sit and have a barbecue and a beer for 3 days while the enemy army is busy regathering itself. You don't do that. You hunt them down endlessly. You keep on hunting them down for days and days on end until you can't find any survivors anymore. You ruthlessly hunt them down. Once you've broken their structure, you kill everybody who survives. You hunt everybody down. You smash them. You pursue each and every one of them. Napoleon's cavalry would chase down troops for days on end after they'd defeated them. That is what you do. You once you break their structure, you don't give them time to recover. You hunt them down and you do anything you can to stop them recovering. Your whole purpose is to think about hurting them to the maximum while making your life as easy as possible and reducing your casualties. There are all kinds of tricks that you use to reduce your casualties, but we're not going to go into that stuff now. But I just want to get the white male's mind away from everything you've been taught, because everything you've been taught is total junk. It's just total and utter illogical rubbish. And you've got to get out of that thinking. That thinking is what gets us killed. It's that stupid thinking that causes us to lose people. And we need to change this game so that we stop losing people and our enemies start losing people exponentially. So those are some thoughts for you. You've got to get into the white male warrior mindset. You've got to be a cold, hard, mechanical device that goes at what you need to do. And you don't sit and worry about screaming and shouting and howling of the enemy. The more they're howling, the more you're hurting them, the better. Now you're doing it right. That's what you do. Let's finally take a look at crowds as a threat to white civilians in the future. If the blacks were going to try massed tactics, with weapons or without weapons, to try and come and murder whites, that could possibly have some effect. Possibly. To a minor degree. They'd have to come into our suburbs, which is where most of us live. In most every town and city, the whites live in the suburbs. The whites already have walls around their properties. They've already got spiked fences. They've already got small-scale defenses at each and every house, literally without fail. The blacks would have to come down roads. These roads could be choke points where you could stop them. These roads could be places where you could put barricades and things to stop them. And assuming you don't have access to military weapons, what could you do? Well, if you did engage in a little bit of preparation, you could use something as simple as a high pressure hose, and that in and of itself could hold back a crowd. There are many things that you can do if you are inventive and if you are determined to resist. And it also depends on whether you are willing to go lethal or whether you want to stay non-lethal. But as you've seen with the police, you can have a vehicle, you can have vehicles where they chuck rocks at you, they do all kinds of things, and the vehicle is not taking any damage. You could even take civilian vehicles and modify them so that they are hardened. Even if a civilian vehicle, for example, can't be armor plated, you could maybe put some kind of steel mesh over the windows that would stop bricks and things actually breaking into the vehicle. So even if the vehicle turns out to be dented and banged up, the vehicle would still be functional and the occupants could still be safe. It all depends on how determined you are to resist what's coming at you. And if you are willing to go beyond non-lethal, if you're willing to go to deadly force, then you can really go to town. Because then you can do a whole bunch of stuff. Then you can try all kinds of things. Then you could even use vehicles as a weapon. You could drive into people with a vehicle. You might not be able to destroy the whole crowd like that, but if you had a heavy enough truck and you drove into them, I assure you, you would kill and injure a whole bunch of them. There are many things that you can do if you start thinking lethal. And if you start thinking lethal, the other thing you can think is entrapping them. Because when they are packed tightly together, you can try and surround them and cut off their retreat points. Then you can actually put them in a spot. And if you are lethal and you really think carefully, you can actually set out to try and kill everybody in the crowd. That is the way that you would approach this thing. And it's very doable. Very, very doable. And even if the crowd came and they were armed, that in and of itself, arming a crowd wouldn't make them much more effective. In fact, if they were to be effective, they'd probably have to be armed and be using standard military tactics where each guy goes and hides behind a corner or lies on the ground or something like that. If they move away from standard military tactics, all it does is it increases the number of dead on their side. So as I've been saying to you, everything is a stage managed failure. You are not seeing the white male using maximum force, which is what he should be using. The white male is not using maximum force. And if the white male is using maximum force, then even small groups of white men who've got a strategy and some basic weapons and tactics that they've worked out could bring a whole crowd to a halt. Even an armed crowd could be brought to a halt. I must tell you that this topic to me is the most critical topic of all. Once you understand that the city is a place that can work for you, that the city can offer you defense, that the city can offer you supplies, that if you work carefully, you can entrap your enemy in the city. You can entrap your enemy so that they don't have food. There are so many things you can do. And these cities that we have in South Africa, these are big places. They've got strong buildings. These things will not collapse like a house of cards. You can use these buildings as fortifications, as defensive positions. You can have a ball. You could have a single sniper sitting in a building. A single sniper sitting in a building, and he just sits there and he just waits for somebody to cross a street and he kills them. And that guy will stop everybody from moving around. One guy. That's all that you need. And if you are willing to use lethal force, if you're willing to kill and maim, the opportunities and options just become ever grander. So, what would Napoleon have taught white South Africans? He would have said to them, use a whiff of grapeshot and your problems will be solved. So, that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.